them all. Step right up. Step right up. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 37. A wretched hive of scum and villainy. Because we're going to be talking about Game Nights at the Portal, which is, that's an ironic title because it is not a wretched hive, but we're going to be talking about that place. I thought, got to get that line in there from Star Wars at some point. Howdy, everybody. My name is The Brant. I am your host, and with me, as always, is...
your co-host, Brian.
And we are coming at you with Portal Gaming Podcast. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. You can check us out on Facebook under The Portal, and we are on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Hey, great to be talking to everybody. We're excited here, recording another episode. How you doing, Brian?
I'm all right. a little congested. I guess it seems like a lot of people are kind of in that same boat at this time of year, but I don't know. How about you?
Yeah, I don't know. We're just in the thick of everything, I feel like. Like, it's the dead of winter. Dun, dun, dun. I mean, it's not very wintry in terms of, like, weather and cold. I guess we just got a little snow. It is getting colder. But it just feels like that spot where it's like, all right, Christmas is over. And there isn't spring weather to, like, get out and play Frisbee and stuff like that. So, you know, it's cool. There's lots of board games and lots of things happening. I've been playing, like, crazy with my daughter.
Oh, nice.
That's my number one person I've been playing with lately.
Like, ranked number one or most plays? Or both?
I don't know the difference.
No, like, the best person or...
Oh, most plays. Most plays. Well, sorry. Ouch. It's okay. She's going to bed right now. No, most plays. We've been playing Ticket to Ride, UK. I love that. I love that map.
Good.
It's so fun. I totally get it. John Roth told me you got to play that map. He said he loves it. I played it. I love it. I think it's so good.
Do you like the Pennsylvania one?
Haven't played it yet.
Oh, okay.
Haven't gotten there. It doesn't really play, like, doesn't look like it plays well with two. It kind of does, but it does play with two, but I don't think it would work. You're fighting over, like, stock certificates, and they run out, so there's no, like, buying them. There's just getting them, and then whoever has the most scores points. So that looks great for, like, a 4- and 5-player game. But, yeah, we've been playing that. We beat Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle. Woohoo!
The whole thing?
Yeah, the whole thing. Nice. My daughter slayed Voldemort with the Sword of Gryffindor. I thought that was awesome. Sorry, spoiler alert. Both of those are in there. and what else have we been playing? Bunch of stuff. Pandemic Legacy. I think I've talked about a bunch of this, so I'm not going to go on with all these things. But it's been really fun. So I've been doing that and doing a couple, like, party game nights and things. I played Resistance Avalon, just super fun. It was Merlin. It was just so interesting to watch people and, those kind of things. So yeah, just a lot going on, and used games at school. We did a project using Alhambra.
Nice. So you did get that.
Got it all in there. We did the project. It's done. So I thought it went over well. The kids had fun. The kids were saying, can we play this again? This is fun. Like, while they were doing it, I was like, all right, excellent job. So, yeah, what's been going on your end on the gaming front?
It's been kind of quiet. I mean, just the, like, just kind of the weekly gaming that I've been doing, like, at the store. Mm-hmm. So besides that, it's been a little bit hectic. Like, these past couple weeks, we've had a lot going on, so it hasn't really been much at home. So hopefully that'll kind of turn the corner. Like, it seems like it's getting a little better, kind of once people are getting over, like, colds and all that sort of stuff. Maybe we can get it back to a regular, you know, a little bit more regular.
I also had a very successful Silk City board game group. I was teaching ghost stories. I did not play. Taught two groups. Both groups lost. I tell them it's like the Matrix. Everybody fails the first jump. So one group was close. They got Wu Fang out, but they couldn't defeat him. But that's fun. I love that game. And unfortunately, I love watching people die. Not that I want them to be just as exciting if they won, but it's kind of exciting to watch them just be like, oh, we got the, what's going on? Why are there so, where are we going to move? You've got to move. And all of a sudden they realize that, like, their path is almost linear or just based on just, we're overwhelmed. I mean, that's what the game does. So I just think it's super fun.
Do you always put people on like the easy
setting?
I
do. I usually put them on the easy setting just to make it even worse. So.
And then you put that, you tell them that
Yeah, this is
specifically.
the easy setting. I mean, that hardest mode is just, it's just there to be there. Because, I mean, you've got to win by
Yeah.
some random happenstance by taking risks,
Have you played on the hardest mode?
Yeah.
Have you, did you win?
No.
Oh,
I've beaten,
okay.
I've got a decent winning record. Now, decent for that game is like 30%, unlike the like medium. So there's like
Okay.
beginner, initiate, or whatever. Or there's like initiate and beginner, and then there's like regular, medium, crazy hard, whatever it is. I don't know. Hell, nightmare, whatever all these things are, probably Diablo-esque like things. So, but I could at least have an idea of how to win on medium. That kind of also has some random habits. But the hardest mode is just brutal. I mean, it's just brutal. So
Now, have you played with the expansions for it?
I have a little bit, but I really like the base game. I mean, it's cool that it has
Yeah.
expansions and there's more there, but
But you
I don't
don't.
know if more is necessarily good in this case. It's almost like, I don't know if I want to think about even more things.
Right.
But it gives you more possibilities to like do good, which kind of I think actually I've heard people say they've taught people that because there's like things you can always be doing. So you always
Okay.
feel like you're saving people and you're gaining artifacts and you're gaining crystals, like you're getting somewhere, not just like, we gotta stop those ghosts, but then you can use those things. So anyway, Ghost
Nice.
Stories, favorite game. Here we go. Upcoming events. Silk City Board Game Group is happening again this month, Saturday, February 18th, from 12 to 4:30. Do you know any of the games that they're going there? Oh, we do. They're doing Great Western Trail. They're doing Pandemic Iberia. They're doing two more games.
Arkham Horror
Oh,
LCG.
LCG, yep.
And then,
Oh, ta-da!
yeah.
Yeah. So those are all those.
That
So I'm
was the name of
sad.
a game, but
We won't be there because we'll be at New York Toy Fair,
yeah.
which will be exciting too. But I'm missing Pandemic Iberia, which I haven't played yet, and I've heard really, really good things about.
Yeah, we brought a couple of those up to the train show that we just went to and sold those pretty quickly, so that was good.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so I gotta try that at some point. So, yeah, Silk City Board Game Group. And then, of course, I don't know, we're gonna talk about this later, but we still have the Thursday night at the store. It's a lot of people will say like 6, 6:30, but there's people there at 5. 4:30 if you get out of work,
Yeah.
playing. So, we're going to talk about that later, but
Yeah.
that's still going on.
And we just got, so International Tabletop Day was
Ooh.
just announced. So that'll be April 29th. We'll be doing that, like the 24-hour board game marathon again this year at the portal. So check in for more details as we kind of figure out the logistics for it. I know the website that we're signing up for it through, it's still kind of not all the information's available to us yet, so it's still kind of coming together. But yeah, like I said, once we find out more, we'll let you guys know.
Straight and simple though, like as cool as it is that there's some promo stuff and there's some extra things from them, like the store is open for 24 hours and you could even come Friday night and just play through. So there's a nice like chunk of time to play.
Yeah.
That'll be super exciting. Of course, the board game library will be up and running, which it always is, but
Yeah.
I'll try to get it. We'll try to get it a little more organized and ready for people. And I mean, that's just a super fun day to just go, go, go. And with all those people, when you start getting tired, there's like other games you can pull out to play. Like, yeah,
Yeah.
everybody's ready to jump into something silly or something light or something social or whatever. It doesn't have to just be all these long games sitting in chairs all the time. So
Yeah.
it's exciting. So we got to bring code games back again.
Yeah, that was fun.
Nice. Awesome. I feel like I'm all like hyped up. I said a bunch of sugar, or I'm just excited to be talking again because we haven't done this in 2 weeks. And it's exciting. So there we go. Let's jump into what's on your table. I got a whole bunch. I got a chance to play the new version of Robinson Crusoe from Portal Games. So they updated it. New rule book by Paul Grogan. Top notch. Super thick. This thing is like 40 pages.
The rule book.
Yeah, it's like super intense. So pretty much everything is in there. I can't remember the one rule that we couldn't find, or it wasn't so clear. Like, anyway, but it was fine. It was all good. So no, but it was definitely like organized, like you could find things. There was an appendix. There was like ways to find where things were in there. So top-notch job done there on it. I had played the game before. The person I played with, it was his copy, bought it new, and hadn't played the second edition. So the art and the cover's different, but the art in the game is the same. They did make stickers for the pieces, so you don't get so confused, like what was this and whose was that and where was that. And I guess they updated some of the cards. I didn't notice anything particular.
Mm-hmm.
We just played and had a blast. I forgot how good that game is. Have you played it?
No.
Oh, man. It's super fun. It's a co-op, it's worker placement, and it's thematic. Like, boom, boom, boom. I know everybody talks about Blood Rage being, like, kind of one of the first, like, Euro, Ameritrash, you know, whatever, hybrid games. I know you don't like it. But Robinson Crusoe was before that, and it's totally there. Like, it's totally got both. At some point, you have to roll dice and see what happens. You're typically successful, but if you fail, they still give you something. Like, there's all these opportunities to, like, adjust and mitigate, or it's not all bad, but then it is all bad. Everything that's happening to you is bad all the time. And we managed to win. You got 12 turns to get off the island, and we saved ourselves on the 12th turn, so... Mm. Skin of our teeth. We played that initial one, which I've played to death now because I'm always introing it to people. And I feel like I got to stop introing that one because I played it so many times. Yeah. I got to try a different one, but I need to find one that I know well. So it's like, yeah. I'm not worried about that. Yeah, but two players, so good. It was so fun. Like, it was just a great time. We're laughing, but we're still thinking. Like, I don't know. It totally was that hybrid. Of course, I'm an Omni gamer. So I like, you know, both ends of that spectrum. But I loved that in one game we're, like, thinking really heavy, but then we're laughing. We're, like, laughing. Like, ah, I got stung by a bee. That's going to be hilarious later. Shuffle the card in. Like, and trying to think of how to mitigate that and all those kind of things. So, yeah, if you haven't checked out if you've never played Robinson Crusoe, definitely check it out. And if, you know, something you're interested in, the new version is just top-notch. It's so good. Mm-hmm. Great job done to redo the rule book and redo everything and put it in a square box because it was in a big box. Now it's in a square box. And yeah, Robinson Crusoe, Portal Games.
Nice. So we actually got the Colonists table a little mm-hmm. while ago from Mayfair Games. And the Colonists is just, you know, looking at it from the beginning, it's just a huge box. And you know there's a ton of stuff in there. I think... What was it like? The box says it's like 60 minutes to like 240 or something like that.
Yeah, like 300 minutes.
Yeah, like something in there. But basically, you are the mayor of a city, I believe, or something like that, that you're kind of developing as it goes along. You're starting from scratch in your own colony. You're trying to develop it, like, you know, build buildings, add housing, and add like different buildings that the people from the housing can kind of go out to and work at. But basically, you're kind of in charge of, like, bringing all those people to your colony, getting all the goods and kind of turning stuff over and just really developing your own colony as, like, the years go on, you know? I'm not really going to get into the full details on it, but we played over the course of a couple of eras. It's intended to be, like, the full game is do that over four eras, which how many, there were a couple of years or, like, 10 or so turns in each era. I believe something like that. You're doing three actions,
right? Yeah, there's like summer and winter over five rounds, and then
right,
yeah, that you're in
or year? Something like that. But basically, you're doing that. You're kind of moving your pawn around all these action tiles that kind of get you goods or let you play cards or stuff like that, or build buildings. And I don't know. It was definitely a unique game. I think I was expecting a little bit more interaction from the colonists, but I was really, it was a fun puzzle to figure out. I think we only played part of the game, so we'd need to try getting through the entire four eras before we actually give like a full review. I guess that was just kind of the initial impression. Like it was a fun solo game that we played together.
Yeah. I mean, it was almost as multiplayer solitaire as I've played. Now, we did play two-player. We played two eras, but that... technically in there, you can play two eras. You just decide
right.
when you're going to score. That's the other interesting part. You don't score at the end of every era. Like, you would think there would kind of be these, like, bumpers in between. But it's literally you just decide, this is how long we're playing, and then we score.
Right.
And which, I guess, in some case, you could set a timer and say we're playing 3 hours, and then we score. I mean, there's some things that happen at, you know, at the end of every thing, but... Yeah, it's like you have your little stewards, which are worker placement, and you move them around. And if you step on somebody, you want to use somebody else's tile or spot, which is like a worker placement spot, you have to pay them some goods.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, like, there's nothing to fight over. There's these colonies that come out, which are cool because you can befriend, like, the other colonies. But that's all open, too. Like, if you befriend them, there's nothing that keeps me from doing that. So there's no, like, asymmetric powers or unique benefits. There's nothing to fight over, like milestones in Food Chain Magnate or one-time things like, oh, you gain this bonus, or there's this unique building or character that you can bring into your colony, you know, key player. So that's what made it rough. Like,
yeah,
solo, it seems like it would be great because you're not fighting, you're just trying to figure out your own timing. You know, you said, like, a puzzle.
Yeah, I wonder, like, I don't know, the colonist seems like there might be something, there's got to be something deeper than I found. I feel like I've just kind of scratched the surface on it. But even so, it felt like it was very, very much in that sandbox mentality where you can kind of go in and say, like, oh, I want to try to do this. And obviously, like the way the action spaces kind of come out over the course of the game, correct, you could be, like, forced into doing something that you're not intending to. It's not completely like you've got everything available to start and you can do whatever you want. There's a little bit more of that guided path, but it felt like you were still kind of a little too open to do, you know, everything. And I mean, some people really do like that. I feel like that's where the difference is between, like, Agricola and Caverna. Like, it's kind of like you can really do whatever you want in Caverna, whereas Agricola kind of forces you into a path to still come to a similar resolution, you know?
Yeah, I agree there, but I mean, at least in Caverna, yeah, everybody always says how it's open, but, like, there are still spaces that people take, and now I cannot take them.
Mm.
So I'm kind of watching other people's, you know, you don't get totally blocked, and they try to shrink with, like, two players, and it goes up to, like, seven, which, Lord help you. they play it at seven. There's also no cards. And to me, that's the big difference between the two. So Caverna, you could just jump in and start playing, and yeah, it's a little more open because you don't have those cards. But Agricola, it's about those cards and that, like, punishment of, like, you better know what you're doing and the timing, so.
Yeah, but with the cards, like, you're kind of, like, I feel like you can go into Caverna and have a strategy that you're trying to follow, right?
Yeah.
Agricola, I don't feel like you can do that pre-absolutely your hand.
Yeah, like, that's what the cards do. They lead you down a path.
It's kind of giving you that tactical sort of nature where it's like, okay, I'd like to follow this strategy if it pans out.
Yeah.
And in Agricola, I think that's where, like, that difference comes into play. With the colonists, it almost felt like it could get to a bit more of that point where it's like, if we kind of understood what we were trying to mitigate or what each of us was trying to do, like, we could have played a little bit more to the that interaction.
Mm.
But it didn't feel like we exactly knew what we were trying. I remember even one of the tiles that came out for the action spaces that you're trying to get your pawn to, I think I put it down on, like, one far corner that didn't help for what we were trying to do, or you had to do a couple steps to get to that one that didn't necessarily bode well every time.
Right.
Like, I felt like that wasn't an intended block based on just kind of throwing it out there to start, but it could have been.
Right.
If we had known that was what we were trying to do.
Yeah, it's weird because you can't even go on a tile and do nothing. So if you can't do the action on the tile, you can't go there. So what you're saying is you put a tile beyond something that was, like, not necessarily hard to do, but just, like, not necessary or ideal or, like, cost. So it's like you almost had to, like, suffer to get to that tile if you needed it.
Yeah.
Which is some interaction, I guess, but like you said, it was kind of unintended. It was just, oh, I'll put this over here.
Yeah. But I mean, it could be a form of interaction. Like, it felt like we were kind of, like, the way to place tiles, you have to be the first player, I believe. The first player gets to place tiles at the beginning of every year. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it didn't feel like there was the need to fight over first player because it didn't feel like we knew what we were trying to force the other player to do.
Which, again, had we played four player, that board would be, like, roughly the same size. And so there'd be more interaction and maybe people putting things in more places. So that could definitely be better. And I have heard the ramp in, like, the third and fourth eras can be significant, so that could be interesting. But to me, it felt like a medium weight Euro with a lot of stuff that was really long. Like, that's what was making it heavy. And that could be great because not everybody wants a heavy game. But it was like, Yeah, no, the decisions were deep, but like you said, it was more of a puzzle than like a tactical, like, I better do this now. It was just like, oh, if I mathematically pan this out, this is the best option.
Right.
Now this is the best, like,
Yeah, the
not,
tension kind of came away
yeah, it
from the
was just
game.
straight up what's going to earn me points. And
Right.
there's probably some long-term, like, there was long-term planning there, but yeah, again, that's my thing. It just felt like a medium weight game that just went on and on and on, and layers and layers and lots of different buildings, and that's what was making it heavy, as opposed to
Right.
like actually understanding
Mm-hmm.
the meshing of the mechanisms or whatever.
Yeah, so kind of in that, like, and also, like, what am I doing for myself rather than what am I doing against you, in a sense? You know, like, it definitely
Yeah.
felt like it wasn't focused on that. And I don't know, I guess that's kind of a negative for me, because I'm not one that's looking to play, like, I don't really play solo games.
Yeah.
That just doesn't, like the tension of that, we're fighting for the same sort of thing. Like, I feel like that's where I want to be playing. Like, that's what really gets me into the game or something like that, rather than just trying to puzzle it out or iterate what I'm trying to do. So I think that's just where it didn't work for me, based purely on the expectations. But, you know, I'm hoping that there could be something in there that is going to create that tension. But getting it back to the table is going to be tough with everything else that's coming around.
You should solo play Terraforming Mars, though.
But it's just a lot of
You really should, though, because you'll feel that tension.
Okay.
Because it's like 14 rounds to get everything done, and you have to singularly, yes, terraform Mars in those 14 rounds. And with three to go, or four to go, I don't know. I mean, your first
Yeah.
times you do it would be harder. You'll be like, how am I going to do this? And all of a sudden, your engine kicks in. Or you end up just short, or you just cruise past it. So I just feel like, yeah, you may never solo because you're just not, but if you were, that one would be good. You'd feel that tension because you're just like, am I gonna pass now? I don't have money. What am I gonna do? Anyway, that aside, I had several people come up and ask me about the colonists since we played it, and it was tough to just kind of tell them what we felt like, and there wasn't tension. It was a hard game to recommend. I mean, I was saying what we said there too, like, if you want to solo this, or you know somebody you're going to play with, and you just want a long played out puzzle, that'll be great. A lot of people I talked to weren't looking for that. They were looking for that more tension style game. But like you said, I could definitely see that. I hear people who are more into that open, longer experience podcasts and stuff saying how much they enjoy it. So I think it's what they're looking for. And I think, like you said, it's not what we were looking for. So
Yeah.
it's definitely not a bad game.
Right,
It's
no.
just, I mean, it's well produced and everything's there and it's well thought out. It's just,
It's
there's
just,
nothing
why
to
would
bring it
it,
back.
yeah, why would it get it back? Like, what would get it back to the table when there's everything else?
So much everything else. All right, Colonists, Mayfair Games. Anything else?
No.
All right. So I got a chance to play Manhattan Project Energy Empire from Minion Games. So I think this game just kind of came out of the blue. Like, I thought it was Kickstarter, but it wasn't.
Which one?
Energy
Sorry.
Empire.
Yeah, it was on
It was
Kickstarter.
on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Oh, somebody told me no. I thought it was there. So anyway, we got some copies into the store, and I had heard really, really, really good things. Like, I think this was Rotto's number one, and several other people put it on their list and were just playing it and saying how good it was and saying, like, amazing worker placement engine builder. And so I really wanted to get to play this. So I got to play it on a Thursday night at the Portal. Played a five-player game. Four people were learning. It really wasn't that long, so it wasn't five-player, like, oh gosh, the length. I mean, we probably knocked out 90 minutes. It might have been 1 hour 45, something like that. So it played pretty quick. And it was fun. I could definitely see it there. The five-player game, like, I don't know if it limited, like, things were so busy, it was hard to be able to play things, so it felt like you had to play very suboptimally to get things done. And I was never really focused on the engine. So what happens in the game is you're attempting to build up, like, you all represent a country, and you're attempting to build up, like, your energy system without pollution. And so that seemed to be a big piece of it. Like, you don't want to have a nuclear plant because that'll pollute your environment, and then you have to kind of clean that up. So that theme was neat. And then there's basically three different places. There's like a government section, an industrial section, and like a, what was the other one? Commercial section. And so you could place workers there, buy buildings, and then you could immediately use any of your buildings from that, of that type. So you buy a building, and then you can use all the buildings of that type. So that's where the engine is. Like, okay, maybe keep buying from the same type, and then you can keep sending workers there. And then your other action, if you've played Manhattan Project, is to pick up all your workers. So it's like Zulkin or these other games. So you can either put workers out or pick them up. And then when you do that, like, you generate energy, but you may pollute and all that kind of stuff. There's a bunch of other things. I'm not going to go into all those details. Component-wise, it's amazing. It comes with, like, little steel beams and little oil barrels and all this stuff. So, yeah, the five-player just seemed like it felt limiting, whereas I could see, like, two-player would be wide open because it doesn't really change the board state. It changes the length of the game. So there's, like, little pollution counters, and when those all go away, like, each round ends, and then when they're all gone, the game's over. So in two-player, I think you might have, like, stacks of three or four of six of them, and in five-player, we had stacks of seven. So there was just longer game, but the spaces... So I just constantly felt like, well, it's kind of suboptimal to stack a whole bunch of workers to go here, because if you want to go to a space to buy a building and somebody has a worker, you have to put two workers there, or, like, an energy and a worker. But it was definitely fun. I want to try it again. Mm-hmm. I think it had that, like, everybody saying it's, like, the greatest game of the year, and then it was like, that's a really fun game. Whereas I think if I went back and tried it again, I'd be like, nope, this is really fun. Like, I could sense that I could like another play. And it wasn't anybody with the people I played with. They were totally fine. The one negative I felt like was I polluted my environment a lot. Now I know that the theme of the game is about not polluting your environment. So I get it. But it seemed like there were so many opportunities to score points. Like, every time a round ended, you flipped a card and you scored points for places that were clean. It just seemed like that might be a key strategy. So unlike something like Great Western Trail, where the more people are playing it, they're finding there may not be a key strategy. It might be open and you can do lots of different things. You know, I'm starting to hear strategies of people getting their train all the way to the line. I'm starting to hear strategies of people not getting cows till later, like all these different ideas. That's very intriguing to me, that every time I could try a different path. Certainly this one would, based on other buildings people took, so, you know, it wasn't there, but it felt like you got to keep that pollution cleared. And that's okay. It's not bad to have a game where everybody know, even when I'm introing a game, I don't tend to give people strategic, you know, things, but in games like that, I might say, this is probably the most important thing to focus on. So if you don't know what else to go for this. One play, no idea, could be totally wrong. So I totally enjoyed it. Unfortunately, I think it was like going to a movie that's been overhyped. It just felt like, okay, I'm going to try it again. But I'm not sure that it was like one of the best games of the year.
You set the expectations low for me, so I can try it and really love it.
There you go. You totally should play it. I think it's absolutely worth a play, and it's totally worth another play for me. I'd love to try a two-player just to boom, 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 have it move in and see where it goes. I'd love to try, like, a 3-4 player just to not be... Like, it wasn't really bogged down, but, you know, you're just waiting. There's just downtime. Again, like I said, it took 90 minutes, so it's not like it was that long, but when your turn is 2 minutes and then you wait 8 minutes to get back and you get a couple, you know, it was there. So, anyway, that was Manhattan Project Energy Empire from Minion Games.
Nice. So I got a couple of smaller games in the other week rather than the normal, like, longer games. But the one I really wanted to highlight was Brick Party from Renegade Game Studios. And I guess I should have been expecting a little bit more because Renegade Game Studios, they've been coming out with a lot of great games. But I wasn't, you know, I was looking forward to Brick Party, but it wasn't one that was like, I was itching to get it to the table. So we did play it. We split up into teams of two, I believe. So we had teams of two. Each team has like a builder and I don't know if it like a, I forget it was an architect and then someone that was kind of describing the plans to the builder. So basically you've got two people, one person's drawing a card that shows like a structure built by Legos basically. The other person, bricks. I don't think you can say Lego.
You can say Lego.
But basically Legos. So it's kind of like this shaded thing where you've got, you don't know exactly what the building is made up of, but you know, like how many pieces go into it and what, like, it's basically kind of a vertical one where you've got different iterations of all the Legos that go into it. So you'll draw that card, you'll describe it without the builder looking at it to like to the builder, and then they have to build it without seeing exactly what it looks like. Once they've finished it, they pass it along to the person describing it and try to match it up to see if they've scored points. Now, that's okay. That seems interesting, but, you know, it doesn't sound all that great. But when you add in, like, another element to it, there's another deck of cards that tells the people that are describing it, like, what they're allowed to do. Now you're adding a bit more of that, like, craziness and hectic, like, all that sort of stuff to what you can do. So, like, some of the rules that you could do, like, for example, one is where, like, the builder has to hold the card upside down facing the person describing it, and the person describing it has to, like, describe it while that the builder's holding it with one hand and putting it together and trying to figure out, like, you know, tilting their head and describing what's going into it. Another time, I think the person describing it has to look away so they can't see what the builder is building, so they have to describe how to build it without the builder. You know, so there's, like, a lot of communication back and forth in that sense. You know, some other ones are kind of minor where it's like, you know, the builder has to use different colored Legos, or they have to use one of each color Lego or something like that. But I don't know. It was really enjoyable. It's definitely got some tension once you kind of get to, like, once one team finishes their structure, then you flip over a timer and the sand timer just goes really quickly. So I mean, once you kind of add that element in too, it's kind of that hectic, like, nature. And it was impossible to break some of those Legos apart during the course of the game. Like, if you make a mistake and you lock it in, you press it in, some of those, you just can't get them apart. So, like, I remember there was one where it's like, we're struggling to get it apart and just, you know, like, it wasn't working. So we're trying to, like, bash it on the table to get it, like, broken into two. Yeah, but I don't know. I really enjoyed Brick Party. I don't know. Have you played this one, Brant?
So I did, and I think you missed the best part of the game. Because you described the actual, like, this is what you're trying to do. There's one person trying to build the other person. Yeah. But the part you miss is the very beginning of the round, when you go around the table and you pick your partners.
Oh, we didn't play that way.
Oh, you didn't play that way! That's the best part. So there's, like, a first player who has a sand timer, and they pick their partner. Now, definitely the setting I played this in was, like, prime for this game. Yeah. So it was four couples who'd been hanging out,
yeah,
having dinner, played Resistance Avalon, had running jokes going for the night, and got to this game. And now you've got couples who aren't sitting next to each other anymore. You know, they're sitting, yeah, on other parts of the table. And you've got that first person, like, who are you going to pick? You know, so you look across to your spouse, like, sorry, honey, I've got to go with so-and-so. And then they've got to go with people. You get people that team, yeah, up. Then there's the last person picked, like, hey, what's going on? And all that kind of stuff. So I thought that was great. I totally agree with you. Like, you describe this game like Codenames, and you go, okay. And then you play the game, and it's just crazy. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, like, four groups shouting across the table at each other.
Yeah.
So you've got that chaos. It's not like you're quietly in a corner, you know, telling your child how to build. Like, okay, mm-hmm, we'll take that one, and I'll put that there. It's like, boom, 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 go, and you're shouting across, right, the table. And you can actually run out of pieces, so they're like, shoot, there aren't enough. Like, hopefully they'll mess up, yeah, and put one back, or they didn't need something. So we were playing the strategy of, like, grab all the pieces first, mm-hmm, so you wouldn't run out, and then try to build them. So,
nice.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, they took this simple concept, and they put gamesmanship to it, and it's all about that gamesmanship. So,
mm-hmm,
yeah, it was great. Brick Party, Renegade Game Studios. All right, last one I'm going to talk about quickly here is Leaving Earth, which is a game by the Luminaris Group. So this is kind of a interesting thing. So this is not something that comes through stores, I know. So we don't carry it, because this company themselves, they produce it. It's like a family Etsy-style shop. It's like they make buttons and beads and magnets and jewelry and craft stuff, and then they make this game that somebody invented, husband, whatever. And so, anyway, Leaving Earth is a, I guess, simulation of trying to create your own space program. So it's 1956 through 1976, and you're trying to achieve all these objectives. So you put all these goals on the table, you know, launch a probe into space, get a man on the moon and bring him home. And then it goes beyond that. So it's not quite a simulation at this point, but, you know, get a probe to Mars, get a sample and bring something home from Mars. Venus, Mercury can be added in, Phobos, you know, moon of Mars, and Ceres and all these different places. So you're trying to achieve all these objectives.
Did you say cheese all?
You cheese, yeah, you cheese them. Now, if you play it multiplayer, they're all worth like a certain number of points, and so then when you complete one, you get those. Everybody else gets funding if you complete one, because it's like, oh, they beat us to it, right? Like the space race. And then at, you know, at the end, when you get to 1976, each year is around, you see who had the most points, and that's the person that wins. If you play it solo, you put all the objectives out, and by 1976, you have to have more points than what remains on the table. So you basically, these are our lofty goals, and if you do half of them, they'll consider that, you know, victorious. So I've just played it solo. I totally would play it multiplayer, but I feel like it would really take somebody that's interested. I feel like theme is so key to this game. So it's very interesting. It's extremely mathematical. I mean, you're working with like tiny fractions and parts and multiple arithmetic calculations on top of each other. So much so, it comes with a notepad to do the tracking of these numbers. So you're basically doing some form of accounting or physics. no trigonometric physics or calculus-based physics here, but those kind of things. So I love it. But, I mean, I adore the space theme, you know, and the actual, okay, I'm NASA and I'm trying to do that. So if I want to do anything, if I want to work on my landing, I have to get the landing technology upgrade, and then I kind of put cards there, and every time I land a spacecraft, I have to draw a card and see if it's successful or not, or if there's an explosion of some sort, and then you can pay to like get those out of your deck, and eventually if you get rid of all the cards, it's auto success. So it's like you're trying to build up and test, you know, so you have to test all these things. Test sending probes into space and having them come back down, and test satellites and all that kind of stuff. Really interesting. Like I said, heavy on that, like arithmetic. It's like multiplication, you know, it's mass times difficulty equals thrust. So it's not that confusing, but again, you've got to know there's like math in the game beyond, you know, you typically kind of see. So anyway, only game I actually got for Christmas, and I totally love it. It's extremely thematic yet very calculated, and it's really exciting to try to figure that out. And it's tough in 20 years to get all those things done. You feel that real pull. Interesting part is you get $25 million funding every year, and that's it. You can't save it. You can't hold it over because it's government funding. So if you don't spend it, you lose it. So you're limited on that, which really slow. You can't say, oh, well, next year we'll just save a bunch of money and have it. You don't have that. So it's interesting on that front. So anyway, that's Leaving Earth. I also have the expansion, Outer Planets.
How long was it typically like, taking you to play? Like, do you know?
Yeah, it's like in the 90-minute to 2-hour range to sit down and play a whole thing. I imagine people that know it and can do the calculations faster because you get used to kind of the same ones every time. You have all sorts of different types of rockets. Juno rockets, Atlas rockets, Soyuz rockets, Saturn rockets. So you can upgrade all those, and they all have more thrust that they provide. And I would imagine people that can do those calculations faster can do it, you know, easier. And then it has easy, medium, and hard objectives, so you can just change the difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
The hard ones are worth more points, and you have to go further into space, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
More calculations. There's even a time element. Like, when you launch rockets, they have to spend time getting to places. Gotcha. So you have to prepare for that. And you can even rendezvous them in space. So if you want to send an astronaut up, rendezvous with something that's up there, and then send that off. That can save you time and or money in what you're doing, you know, but you have to like plan that out, and you have to upgrade your like rendezvous technology to connect the two shuttles. And it's intense. I mean, it's a physics problem in a box. But anyway, I just thought it was something worth mentioning because I was looking forward to it, and I really enjoy it. So Leaving Earth, Luminaris Group. I think that's it.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. That's what's on our table. Let us know what's on yours. All right, for the discussion topic, trying to, I don't know, we're just going to talk about this. I don't have an intro. So, I was just thinking about some things related to, like, the store. Like, I feel like we do a lot of topics, and sometimes I have people say, like it's a board game podcast about the store, but you tend to just talk about games. And it's like, well, yeah, it's I don't know. I kind of view it as like it's something that's a product of the store. You know what I mean? And we want to bring things back to the store. But the goal of this podcast is not like, everybody turn your money over to Portal. That'd be great if you want to do that. We are accepting that. But, you know, that's not really the goal. It's, you know, an awareness of the store is helpful. But I think you and I know you and I at heart are gamers, and we just want to talk about games and hang out there.
Yeah.
I'm also a big talker. I don't think anybody's noticed, but there's that. So anyway, I thought it'd be interesting to talk about demos, demoing, and then even like board game libraries and just what that brings and what that looks like and what's interesting with a demo and how that kind of works. So when I first started working for the Portal, it was the week it opened. And essentially, I think there were some people in there prior. So different from what it's like now. There wasn't really as much lighting. There was like two tables and things running across the floor. So you said to me, here's a bunch of games we got in. Open them up, figure them out, punch everything out. And then next week, see if you can run some demos or see what you could talk to people over there. So I went in. I was super excited for that. But of course, as soon as I see people, I walk up to people. I'm like, what games do you like? I'm Brant. What do you want to play? Playing a game with people that day and demoing to people. And so I really spent like the first 2 years doing a lot of demoing. That's what I was doing a lot of. Didn't have a board game library then. So we were getting that up and running as well. And so I think I learned a lot about demoing and those kind of things. So I really would like to hear your guys' experience, what you like in a demo, what your expectation is. But here's some things that I've discovered, and then I'll have you comment on what you think. So I really feel like a demo is to get an idea of what the game is like. Now, at our store, it's different from, say, Gen Con, where they're trying to cycle through so many people. That's different. But to me, a demo is, you know, here's the rules or here's the basic rules. We'll play through typically to a point. If people would like to stop, that's fine. Or if I think there's a good stopping point. If I were to demo the Colonists, for example, I would just play Era 1 and I would let everybody know. But I very often will remove or strip down rules that just don't seem necessary that I could mention at the end. I think, you know, when you're demoing, as in learning something, you know, you're playing it to see what it's like, if it's something that you would like, as opposed to an actual first play, you know, that you might do at a board game group where it's literally you just schedule you want to play the game. So I think that's important. I think that one of the bigger things I discovered is me, the demo or not playing is important to be able to answer everybody's questions and go around, even throw some strategic advice for people when they get stuck because you don't want like that AP element. And I think even like pre-setting decks and pre-setting things is important, like not, you know, totally. But for example, if I were to do King of Tokyo, well, those first three cards that come out are going to be very straightforward cards. I'm not going to find the cards that require you to dig for multiple tokens that can then get passed, that can then change this, allow you to have another it's going to be, hey, you can score two more stars. You know, something that's very related to what the game is and like, and those kind of things. So I think even the best demoing that I've done is when you can just get people playing. I think of the best demo I've ever had given to me was the Paul Grogan demo of Adrenaline. I still just love that we had at Gen Con this year. Where he said, okay, you're green. You're going first. Like, he just picks green. He's like, you got two cards. Play one. Well, what do they do? Just play one. You play it, then he tells you what's going to happen. You take your turn, you do this. Okay, now we come up to this situation. Now it's your turn. I love that, like, jump in. That's tough for, like, a heavy Euro, where people want to know the strategy. But, you know, demoing a heavy Euro is very different. Typically, you see people showing these off and explaining the concept more than, like, we're going to play a single round of this heavy Euro, where you wouldn't really get the experience. So that's kind of been my demo experience. What do you feel like?
Yeah, I guess mostly when I've gone through and, you know, like I feel like there are a couple different ways that I've tried to describe games. You know, like there's either like a quick pitch in like those 30 seconds that you're talking to someone, like trying to describe like what a game's basic function is, you know, and even then, like there are some displays that kind of work well with it. Like I'm thinking of the Dr. Eureka display where you can kind of quickly do something to showcase like what you're actually playing, you know, or even like Concept or Ghost Blitz or something like that, where it's like, you can play like, you can play around in 30 seconds, you know, you've got that sort of thing, you know, even if you're trying to like describe something, I guess there's that like that pitch of like, oh, you take for like Smash Up, for example, is like, oh, you take like dinosaurs and pirates and you mix them together. So yeah. You have dinosaur pirates and you're fighting over all these locations, you know. So that's not as much in the demo vein, but the other ones you can really play through. And I'd like to figure out a little bit more how to do that outside of the store, you know, go to like different conventions or mm-hmm. whatnot. This past weekend, the store was at a train show, you know, up at like the Big E fairgrounds. Like there's a huge train show that goes on every year. And we go up because we've got trains and all that sort of, like everything related yep. to that too. But we also have a lot of train related games and no one else up there really has those. So we're up there and we've got something that makes us unique within that whole crowd. Mm. And people will walk up and it's like, oh, what are these all puzzles or what are these? And like it's fun to just jump in and say, you know, no, these are games. And they have that look of like, I didn't know there were so many games out. Like, I didn't know about all these games. And even then we've got like one small table with train games, you know, not even right. like a ton of the selection that there is for like the hobby game market. Mm-hmm. But even so, it's tough. Like, I want to get them engaged with something. Like, I want them to be having I want their hands on. And that's where I think I'm trying to figure out how to get it to like that next step. Because I can show them the back of like the box for Ticket to Ride and, you know, describe what it does, like how to play it. But it still is like a little bit of a disconnect. Like it's not like they're not feeling that yeah. interaction. They're still kind of looking at it from like a, oh, okay, that sounds neat, but I don't know. Maybe I'll try it. Maybe I won't.
You don't have one that's open?
We have done that, but it doesn't really have the same effect. Like,
because I would think a Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
Where you, I don't know, even in that case, you preset some hands. I mean, it's tough because people are just constantly coming up. You know, that's
yeah.
it. Or at least you could say, okay, well, you get to grab two cards from here, even just a person solo playing. Now, you've got a set, so now play those here. You get to put those down. And see, you're trying to connect these, you know, make a short route that's right. like two things so they can see what they're doing.
And I think I'll do that's that a pretty for next year. I think if we have space, we'll try to do it so we can have people sitting down for it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's tough. It's like the show is only like 2 days and it's like, you know, right. 8 hours and 9 hours or something like that. Like, you know, it's not that long. So for someone to kind of sit down and, you know, like there's only so much manpower that we can have going into it, but I totally think it's worth it. It's just, it's cool to see, like, to try to reach people that aren't necessarily like within the market that we're trying to hit. Like, mm-hmm. they're not hobby gamers.
Right.
So even then, like, even still, I mean, we did have a lot of people that came up to us, and it's like they were kind of mentioning, "Oh, I've played Ticket to Ride. Like, I've played the app. I've done all yeah. that sort of stuff." So it's neat seeing that transition. Like, I remember a year or two ago, it was just like no one talked about any of the games. It's like they'd pass by and kind of like, "Oh, okay, that's all right." But now it feels like it's kind of getting more toward the like. Like, it seems like it's becoming a little more saturated, or people are really coming up and looking for the games rather than coming to our booth and just having them fall into their laps, basically.
So what you're saying is next year you need to bring me up so I can demo those games.
Yeah, next year we need to demo stuff.
Nice.
But but I guess it's tough trying to find that good balance, because I think you could, like, demos seem ideal in that shorter time frame, like the quick games that like you could play around and have the full experience too.
Right, yeah.
I think that's where I'm having a bit of a disconnect. Like Ticket to Ride, I feel like beginning to end is where you get like all the value of it. You can still see it, you can still go through and start it and, you know, get to a certain point. And I think there's definitely value in that, so people have a foundation, like they can figure out like what you're trying to do in it. But I think to really get someone engaged, like even for me, I remember like just beginning to end of like Ticket to Ride or Dominion when I just was starting out, like playing through an entire game was what really got me hooked, you know.
I totally agree with you, but from what you're saying, you know, whatever, these non-gamers or you know, casual gamers, I think the barrier you're breaking there in there is not like, oh, this strategic choice, but like the ease of play.
Yeah.
So I think what you do is if they get to play a couple rounds, they're like, oh, I get this. I understand what I'm doing. And I'm making choices, right? That's what we love about a lot of our modern games. It's not, okay, you've got a choo-choo train in New York. Roll your dice. Oh, you rolled a 3. You move to Philadelphia. Oh, you rolled a 6. You move to Pittsburgh. Like, and just roll and move, and you just go, 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 and somebody gets it. Right. But they actually see. So I think them understanding, oh, this is easy to play. I could play this with so-and-so, kids, family, wife, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then realize, and there's interesting choice here. So I think they would see that. And then, you know, if somebody's really interested, then you say, yeah. And when you get to the whole game, like, you can get more tickets. I think you could plant those things without a full playthrough of it. Now, if you had space and people could do a full playthrough.
That's great, yeah.
Because I do think there's three levels there. You've got your elevator pitch. When somebody walks up to the table, the boxes are closed. You've got your demo where somebody could sit and just see what it's like. And then you've got your, like, I'll call it first playthrough, which to me isn't even really a demo.
Like the full immersion
the
sort of?
The full, yeah, where maybe everybody doesn't know every strategic thing. Maybe there's a few rules stripped out, but it is a first play.
Mm-hmm.
When people go to Essen, that's what they get, a first play. You don't get up and walk away after 30 minutes. But at Gen Con, we get a lot of playthroughs, but there are some that are intended to be like, and this is where the demo stops, you know?
Yeah.
And they bring the next person in, which I think is fine. You
know,
I think people need to know that going in.
Yeah.
You're being demoed to. We're not going to, you know, you say that up front. Okay, we did this. We shortened it by this. You're starting with this, you know, whatever it is. I removed this thing from the game. You know, people know that up front. And then there's the expectation is this is what's happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think part of that is just, you know, I want people to kind of get all the way on the deep end from the beginning. You know, like, it's there's that balancing act of, like, you know, you want some people you need to bring in gradually. Some people would love just to, like, hop right in and figure it out from there. But there's a lot of value in getting people, like, even if it's like a subconscious sort of thing where it's like, okay, now I kind of have an idea of this. Like, this is, I saw that game like 2 years ago at the train show, you know, like there's a ton of value in that. Even if it's like we see a ton of people that are there every year. So you start kind of building on a new community too. So I think it'll be worth it. I know we need to bring up a few more copies of Ticket to Ride just to really make it the focal point, because I think that's a great example of one where you can just have someone hop right in, and you could play, like, you could play the full game, you could play a short, like, a round or something, you know, kind of get the sense of how the turn order works and all that sort of stuff. But I don't know, there's so many games out there too. It's just, it's tough trying to reach everyone with all of those.
Yeah. Well, we'll work on that for next year. I'll help you out.
Yeah.
We'll come up with good ideas to demo or have playthroughs or whatever, because I think that would be good.
I guess, sorry, the other end of things, like at the library, that's kind of in that first play.
Right.
Like, and we're talking through, and I guess that one has its own difficulties that come with it. You know, it definitely feels like if you're lacking on any part of the rules when you're trying to talk through it, all of a sudden something could, like, oh, you didn't tell me that, or something like that. And it's very tough when you're going through. But I feel like that's where my hesitation comes from, like, trying to teach games, like, just in general. Like, there's definitely that barrier there for me where I don't want to miss something and have it kind of come back on me. I'm getting better on that, and I think that's kind of where I have to force myself to do it. So, you know, I kind of learn from my mistakes and get to a point where I'm better at it. But I guess that's just something where you kind of have to get through that initial teaching role, get to that, and really get enough under your belt that you can kind of go through it and not make the same mistakes that you've made in other games.
Yeah, I think, like, two that I've taught recently at the library, Ghost Stories, and then I taught London Dread. And so I think on that first play front, where I'm not demoing, because I'm not saying, well, it's only going to be a taste of the game. They're actually playing the game. But, like, when I did Ghost Stories, I said, we're just going to jump in. So first thing, you got to pick a special power. They're all good. Pick one. You know, so Yeah, I could have gone through and told them the whole game and then had them all pick, but I think that was okay for a first play. Like, they still got choice. It was still there. They knew this was a thing, but it wasn't like, I'm going to give you every rule and then you'll know. And then just had the first person take their turn. And as, like, ghosts came out, I said, this ghost does this. Now this ghost does this. Okay, after everybody played a turn, see that token in front of you? That token gives you this ability. So it was like a demo, but they got to play the whole thing, and I didn't, like, strategically remove those things. Now Ghost Stories lends itself to doing that well.
Yeah,
I think, like, you were teaching Oceanos, like, that's tough because the first turn people have to pick, what card do I want? And they want to know all the options, right? So even though that's a pretty simple game,
right,
people want to know, well, what's every symbol I'm looking at and the order. You can't say, everybody take a card with this symbol. Now we'll draft again. Everybody take a card. It would be, you know, a subpar play. So I could see something like that. When I did London Dread, that has like a 12-minute timer. So I explained everything. I showed a couple samples of like what happens after the timer. But as they were playing, anytime I wanted to mention somebody to them or they wanted to ask a question, I paused the timer. So they didn't really have a 12-minute timer. Yeah. So that, to me, was, you know, it wasn't a demo. A demo would be just go and this is what's going to happen and it all falls apart. Oh, well, it was quick. That first play was, well, we're going to break the rules here by pausing the timer to tell you other things that are key to know right now or whatever. So
yeah, and I think it's also getting the players comfortable with just starting off. You know, like I know there's a lot of hesitation a lot of times where it's like some people need to know every single rule that, you know, like they have to ask all the questions about every single thing. And some people are a little more open to just hopping right in. And that's going to be the case with no matter, like, with any group that you're playing with. But I feel like getting them, like, you know, kind of talking through, like, what the turn would look, or, like, what a round would look like, or something like that. Like, I think there's definitely, like, an art to getting people so they don't feel like they're missing stuff. Even if they are, even if you're kind of spoon-feeding them, like, information.
Yeah.
You have to get them comfortable with what you've been feeding them so far, you know?
Yeah, when I teach something heavier like that, typically I'll try to say, like if it's a game where I feel like, just do anything. Like, there's some where it's okay to just do anything. Everything will work reasonably well.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, you really want to focus on this piece early and don't worry about that till later. You know what I mean?
Right.
Those kind of things. Like Great Western Trail, for example, you can go to somebody else's space and get a single auxiliary action, which can be beneficial to just draw a card, right, or get a cool whatever. But early on, it's like, don't worry about doing that.
It's
like,
very situational. Yeah.
Right. Later on, it could be a good strategic choice, but it's not a big deal. So I do want to talk about board gaming libraries at some point, but I think we'll save that for another one because that was a pretty good discussion on demoing.
Oh, yeah.
And we're a little shorter on time, so I know you're going to head out. So let us know what you feel about demos, demoing, and all that. And I'm just going to roll right into what we love about ... We haven't done this in a little while. A little bit of a cheat here, I guess. But we've just been having some great Thursday nights at the Portal. And I know Sundays are going well, too, so I don't want to make it sound like we had this one night and then there's nothing. Because there's plenty of other times. I was there Saturday as well, and there was a lot going on. But Thursday nights have really kicked in. There's been a lot of people. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I love it. So I want to talk about what I love about it. So I thought it was a good nod to the store. So if you don't know, Thursday nights, there's a meetup group. It's the Game On meetup group. You can search for them on Meetup. And they've been running the show. So, I mean, we just have the space, and they've been running that. So that's been really good. And like I said, you know, 6:30, I think it says on there, or 6 o'clock, but people are there 5:35. Even earlier, and it's just jump in, and it's everything. We've got, you know, heavy Euro games that are coming out. I've played Brass on that night. I've played Haspelknecht, and I've played all sorts of the games. And then, like, you were playing light social games on the feed there the other night. What is the feed?
Late to the Table.
Yeah. Oh no, I know it's Late to the Table. What's the streaming system? I can't remember the name of it. I'm sorry. Anyway, so yeah, but you've been on Late to the Table. You were playing some of the Party's games.
Oh, on Twitch?
Twitch, there it is. Room 25, right? You played the other night. You were playing Brick Party, and they usually have a bunch of light social games going on, you know, One Night Ultimate Werewolf and all sorts of stuff. So that group is loud and crazy and boisterous. And then it just spills all the way out of that board game room. typically I see people pulling Pandemic off the shelf, Ticket to Ride, Carcassonne, those are all coming out, the like modern classics. Spills all the way out. You know, we're playing usually on those kind of outer tables. And then there's role-playing. There's magic going on that night. There's people in the other room. So Thursday nights are just hopping. So if you're looking to do anything or even jump between those things, it's just been going really well. And it goes right up to 11 o'clock at close. There's usually people there for a while. And then they actually head to another location to play further beyond that sometimes, yeah, too. So, which is great. You know, that's our closing time. But it's really just been good. It's just great people. I mean, everybody I play with is fun to play with all the time. You know, nobody, you know, people do a good job and play seriously, but I haven't had any, like, arguments or people being upset. Like, everybody gets yeah. there to have fun. We played Terraforming Mars last week, and it was, like, the worst game of Terraforming Mars I've played personally. I still had a blast. It was fun. It was great to play with everybody. And we knocked that full game out, drafting, start at zero, and, you know, yeah. under 2 hours. So, yeah, it's just been awesome, and I've said a lot, so go ahead.
Oh, no, no, I mean, it's just been great from, like, a consistent standpoint. For me, personally, like, just getting it so it's, I know that's when I'm going to be able to play some games, and I'm going to be able to meet a lot of people that, you know, like, that's just where people meet up, and mm-hmm. I get a chance to play games with people that I don't know. So, I just had a great time, like, you know, whatever I'm playing, like, this past week was awesome, you know, kind of playing with a different group than I had played with before, and then even going into, like, you know, heavier games again. Like, I'm glad that there's a place that we can do this. And just meeting you guys has been great, too. So, I don't know. I guess it's just been, it's been fun. And I want to get more stuff in. It's tough right now, but.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to be able to, at some point, just, you know, even if it's just, like, some occasional things, like the 24-hour marathons. Right. And that sort of stuff, like, just building off of the relationships that come out of, you know, the consistent events, that's really where we can kind of take it and keep expanding the community, too.
Yeah, and the group is just welcoming. Like, I'll see people, so you can sign up on the meetup there, and then people post what they're going to be playing, or just people post if they're coming for the first time, and people are on the lookout for them, like, have an open slot, or they'll say, hey, this game is finishing up in 10 minutes, or I'm in the middle of a game right now, but let me find you a group. Like, they're just very welcoming of people. So I just think it's a great, great time. I really, like, am sad the weeks where I just can't make it. Yeah. You know, something comes up, it just doesn't work. Or I have a job right before it now. Like, I have my regular day job, and then I have another one. So it's like, oh, I'm going to miss an hour of it, you know, and it's sad. So I just thought that would be a good thing to point out. So if you haven't made it, if the drive is a little bit far for you, but you know, you're listening to us, but, you know, hour, whatever drive, and there's a week that it just works out, it's highly recommended. It's just a great time. It's a great place to meet up with people. It even will, like, kind of push you out of your zone of games you normally play, because, like, yeah, sure, let me sit down and try that. You know, it's exciting to just to play with those people. So that's Thursday nights at the Portal. So check it out. Alrighty, on the horizon here, games still to come out. We're looking at Not Alone from the Geek Attitude Games. I believe it's also getting picked up by Stronghold at some point. Dungeon Time from Ares Games. Amon Ray. Flip City Wilderness is coming out. And 3-4-Headed Monster from Tasty Minstrel Games. So some games that are coming up soon that you can check out. Brian had to go, so it's just me, the Brant. Really good episode. Episode number 37 is finished. A wretched hive of scum and villainy is not what you'll find at the Portal. But that was a fun name to have. So, thanks everybody. Great episode. Good show. Good talking to you. As always, we will see you soon. Until then, we hope you step into the Portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on February 1st, 2017. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening.